Chapter 9. The Feast, Spy Eyes, and Devil's Snare. Hiei found himself free to move, and pulled the hat from his head, outwardly calm. Gryffindor? The hat had put him in Gryffindor? He set the blasted thing on the stool and walked towards the far table, mind working furiously. They'd all expected him to be in Slytherin. He'd expected to be in Slytherin. The few loosely outlined strategies the team had come up with were all going to have to be scrapped. As before the sorting, Hiei's sharp hearing caught murmured comments as he looked down the long table and caught sight of Harry. The boy was leaning over to talk to another one. "Scoot over a bit, Neville. We met him on the train. He's a bit nervous."
"He's glaring.
He's okay." Hiei kept his face expressionless, walking down to stand next to Harry, raising an eyebrow at him and the other boy. He was spared from saying anything when McGonagall called the next name. "Corim Yukina." Hiei sat down between Harry and Neville, fists clenching as he watched the hat settle down over his sister's eyes. He did not want that thing near his sister's mind.
"Hufflepuff!"
Hiei relaxed fractionally as Yukina emerged from under the hat, beaming, and joined her table.
"Kuwabara Kazuma."
The hat hadn't even touched Kuwabara's head before it shouted, "Gryffindor!"
"Aw, man, not with the shrimp," Kuwabara blurted out.
Laughter rippled through the hall. Hiei glared daggers at Kuwabara as he hurried over to the table. The largest Tante caught Hiei's look and prudently took a seat at the far end of the long table. Hiei turned his glare on Harry and Ron in turn, then Kurama. The fox was one of the few who hadn't laughed, but Hiei knew Kurama was laughing on the inside. It was not funny.
"Minamino, Kurama."
To Hiei's utter indignation, Kurama flicked a glance at him and winked before taking his place under the hat.
"Hello, Yoko Kurama."
"Hello, Hat," Kurama said politely.
"Well now, where shall I place you?" it mused.
"I need to be in Slytherin." Kurama felt the hat twitch on his head.
"That was quick."
"I need to be in Slytherin. It's as simple as that." Something fluttered against the limits of Kurama's mind, close to the highly protected link he sometimes used to communicate with Hiei.
"But you want to be with the young demon in Gryffindor, don't you? You are brave, risking everything to save your human mother."
"Firstly, I'm not an actual adolescent. We work well together, but I can survive without him. And secondly, leave my mother out of this. I have to be a Slytherin."
"Persistent, aren't you?"
The hat sounded a bit put out that Kurama hadn't risen to its baiting.
"Why, Slytherin? You're hardly being pressured or expected to be there. You have options."
"You know perfectly well why we, the seven of us and the new professor, are here. We need eyes in Slytherin. Hiei and I are the only ones capable of surviving that house, and you've placed him already. In Gryffindor, of all places, I might add."
Kurama smiled, wickedly amused. "He'll never live it down." "Well, it is in your nature," the hat sighed. "At least we agree. You belong in Slytherin."
Kurama removed the hat and stood, unsurprised at the weak applause he was getting from the Slytherin table. It would seem Malfoy had begun circulating negative information about him already, though no doubt he'd done more damage to Hiei's position. Perhaps it was better for Hiei to be in Gryffindor, after all. He walked calmly to the Slytherin table, selected a seat at the far end, and made his way down the length of the table, easily avoiding a number of attempts to trip him. He paused as he passed behind Malfoy, not looking at the blonde as he spoke.
"Really, Mr. Malfoy, I'm a redhead, not a Weasley."
Draco stiffened, darting a murderous look towards Kurama, but the fox pretended not to see it and took his seat.
Harry sat, stunned, eyes fixed on Kurama as he made his way to the Slytherin table. Slytherin? 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 Ron hissed in disbelief, echoing Harry's thoughts. But he was nice on the train. And smart, Hermione added, leaning over the table. He glanced at her.
So? He asked.
So? Ron whispered. So, they're Slytherin. They're cunning, Hiei interrupted. I was going to say evil.
Hiei shrugged indifferently, turning his eyes back to the sorting as McGonagall called out, Shinime, Botan.
Don't you care? Harry growled, suddenly furious. He's your friend.
Of course I care, Hiei said calmly. It's a very good house for him.
But, Ron sputtered, but...
Hiei leaned across the table, meeting the redhead's eyes with steely calm. Kurama is loyal, but only to those who are loyal to him. Once he has decided your worth, he will not betray you. Unless you first betray him. He's vicious when he's been betrayed. That's why he's in Slytherin. Remember that.
Ron gulped.
Right, mate. He cast about for a change of subject. Isn't that your sister being sorted?
Hiei's gaze turned scornful. My sister was already sorted. That is Botan.
Hufflepuff! The Hat yelled. Right, Ron muttered. Hiei looked away, watching the blue-haired girl take a seat next to Yukina.
Urameshi Yusuke, McGonagall called.
The black-haired boy took his seat with a faint smirk. Harry's eyes drifted from him to Kurama, only to find the redhead was looking back. Kurama held his gaze for a moment, then his eyes shifted to Hiei and back, and he smiled. He looked pointedly at the sorting once more, and Harry hastily followed suit.
Gryffindor!
The last transfer student, a brunette girl, waited politely for McGonagall to call. Yukimura, Keiko, before making her way to the stool. It was only a moment before the Hat shouted the final sorting of the year.
Ravenclaw!
Dumbledore waited for the girl to run to the Ravenclaw table, then stood. To our newcomers, welcome. To our old hands, welcome back. There is a time for speechmaking, but this is not it. Tuck in! The students laughed and applauded, for the most part, as food appeared out of nowhere. The usual roasts, vegetables, breads, sauces, and pitchers of pumpkin juice were accompanied by teapots and smaller single-serving dishes of artfully arranged foods. A bowl of rice appeared next to Hiei's elbow. Harry watched as Hiei selected a covered bowl and a few of the smaller plates, each with something different on it, and decided to try one. Harry took the small, square dish nearest him, the food on it cut and garnished to look like a white, many-petaled flower. It was easy enough to scoop up the flower with his fork, which was fortunate because he didn't know how to work chopsticks.
I didn't know Westerners liked raw fish,
Hiei said, right as Harry popped it whole into his mouth and bit down. Harry's eyes flew wide, and he grabbed his napkin off his lap, spitting the fish into it. He gulped down most of his glass of pumpkin juice, sputtering a bit when he came up for air. Ron's face was a picture.
Raw fish?
Ron squeaked, eyes widening as Hiei bit into his own flour. Harry finished off his juice and poured more, seeing the corner of Hiei's mouth turn up wickedly.
Squid,
Hiei confirmed. Ron turned faintly green. Neville's fork went clattering to his plate. Hiei's hand shooting out to clench in the front of the boy's robes as he fell backwards.
Neville!
Hermione gasped, bolting half out of her seat. Hiei pulled Neville up a bit to peer into Neville's face.
Is he okay?
Harry asked, trying to look around Hiei.
Fainted,
Hiei grunted, yanking the boy fully upright. Dean pushed Neville's plate out of the way, giving Harry space to put Neville down on. Hermione settled back into her seat,
relaxing now that Neville had been taken care of. Her eyes gleamed with the look Harry was all too familiar with as Hiei went back to eating. "So, Hiei," she said, "is it all raw fish?"
"No."
Harry set down his pumpkin juice.
"So, what is it then?"
he asked. Hiei glanced up, eyes flashing with resignation. He then began pointing at various dishes, curtly naming each item between bites. Neville came around halfway through Hiei's listing and picked at his food for the rest of the meal. Dessert came and went, no one saying anything when Hiei slipped a number of pastries into a napkin and hid it in his pocket. And finally Dumbledore stood once more. The hall fell silent.
"Well, now that we are all digesting another magnificent feast, I beg a few moments of your attention for the usual start of term notices. First years and transfers ought to know that the forest in the grounds is out of bounds to students, and a few of our older students ought to know by now, too."
Harry, Ron, and Hermione exchanged smirks.
"Mr. Filch, the caretaker, has asked me, for what he tells me is the 462nd time, to remind you all that magic is not permitted in the corridors between classes, nor are a number of other things, all of which can be checked on the extensive list now fastened to Mr. Filch's office door. We are delighted to welcome a new teacher to our ranks, Professor Genkai."
Most of the students gasped in awe, and the hall broke out in excited whispers as Dumbledore continued.
"Who has kindly consented to fill the post of Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. Quidditch tryouts will take place on the..."
Ron came out of his shock. "Wow," he murmured.
"Hiei, why didn't you say Genkai was your sensei?" Hermione asked, leaning over the cleared table.
Hiei raised an eyebrow and smirked as she gushed.
"This is so incredible. She's like the leading authority on dark creatures."
"No wonder Kurama wanted my chocolate frog card."
"So she's been teaching you all privately?"
Hermione asked Hiei.
"She has?"
Suddenly, several other Gryffindors were leaning over the table, pushing at Harry and Neville.
"How long? Did she pick you guys special? What's she like?"
A flash went off in Harry's face.
"Colin, cut it out," he said, rubbing at his eyes.
He was seeing spots. A hand clapped down on his shoulder.
"Oi, oi, quit mobbing the guy. Oi, I said back off. Put the camera away, man. You've got all year to look at people. What the hell is going on?"
Harry blinked, the spots fading, and looked up to see the other black-haired transfer student. His name was Yusuke, if Harry remembered the sorting right, standing over him, one hand on his shoulder and another on Hiei's. Dumbledore's voice carried over Harry's confusion.
"I see that you are quite excited about our new teacher. That's excellent, but you might want to be a little less effusive in your greetings."
He watched expectantly, and the Gryffindor students sheepishly settled back down. Yusuke plopped down between Harry and Hiei, rather than going back to his own seat.
"What was up with that?"
he asked quietly, ignoring Dumbledore.
"Their stupid Ningen,"
Hiei muttered. "He's trying to create a photographic record of my time at Hogwarts," Harry said, even more quietly. Yusuke shot him a penetrating glance.
"And you are?"
"Harry Potter."
"Oh."
Yusuke frowned for a second, thinking, then snapped his fingers.
"Oh, right! Osezonsha-sama!"
Harry buried his head in his hands. "Not that again." Yusuke clapped him on the shoulder again.
"Tired of that, eh? I get it. I'll just call you Harry. Wait, no, wrong one. I'll call you Potter, then."
Ron blinked. "Don't you mean Harry?" he asked.
"Nah,"
Yusuke shrugged. "We just met. We don't know each other well enough. I'm Yusuke Urameshi. You can call me Urameshi." There was a sudden commotion around them. The other students were standing, obviously dismissed. Hermione signaled to Harry.
"Come on, Harry. We have to lead the first years, and I guess the transfers too, up to the dorm," she said.
"Can we wait a minute?" Harry asked. He could see the professors leaving. He still had to ask about Snape.
"No, Harry, we're responsible here."
Ron let out a snort, and Hermione turned on him. We are! Come on, Harry!
But Hermione, it can wait!
Oh boy. Harry sighed, giving in at that moment. Fine, he said through gritted teeth. Hermione drew herself up. First years, she called. They crowded to her, and the orange-haired transfer student showed up next to Yusuke and Harry. Yusuke introduced him as Kuwabara, and the entire group followed Hermione from the Great Hall. Later, several levels lower in the castle, Kurama entered the fifth-year Slytherin boys' dorm. He looked around the unoccupied room, examining his assigned den for the year. It was roughly circular, containing six twin beds arranged like spokes on a wheel, around a coal heater. Each had heavy green curtains, currently drawn to display neatly made beds, and stood on matching thick carpets. A trunk sat on the floor at the foot of each bed, and a nightstand was set on one side of the head, against the wall. The tapestries covering said wall were predominantly green. There was just one gap in all the green, on the other side of the room, where Kurama could see a single window flung open to let in the pleasant evening air. Kurama found his own trunk at the foot of the bed nearest him on the right. It was the best bed for a fast getaway, if the window was blocked, but it was the worst bed in every other respect. It was right next to the door, on the side the door opened on, so Kurama's bed would be the first hit in any sort of attack. For the same reason, it would be the favored target for thefts, pranks, and vandalism. He needed to fix this. He shut the door behind him and pushed a bit of power into his voice to summon a creature like Hiei's Makai imps. House elf, he heard. Ah, so that's what they were called. How interesting. The air shimmered before him, and a creature materialized before him. Kurama raised an eyebrow. Taking in the height, the long limbs, the flattened face with its huge eyes, the soft, smooth, greenish skin, and the tea towel it wore. This was not expected. What is Masters wanting? Tubbles is... The creature froze, eyes landing on Kurama. It drew itself up huffily. Use is not master. Use is student. Use is not supposed to summon Tubbles. My apologies, Tubbles. I am new here, and I don't know all the rules yet, Kurama said calmly. I was wondering if you could do me a small favor. The house elf tilted its head. Tubbles is listening, but Tubbles is not promising. Student must not be helped breaking rules.
Oh, no, no, Kurama said hastily. I don't want to break a rule, but would it be allowed for me to have a small pot of dirt?
He sketched the dimensions of a fairly small flower pot with his hands. Something suitable for roses. Just one? I'm used to growing them by my bed at home. The elf beamed.
That is no problem, student, sir. Tubbles is getting right a ways.
It paused.
Student is not to be summoning house elves again, though. Masters is getting very upset when student summons house elves.
I promise, Tubbles, I won't summon a house elf again.
Tubbles nodded and vanished.
Kurama drew a seed from his hair, made it sprout, and hid his hand in the folds of the curtain at the head of his bed, trickling his power into the growing vine. It burrowed through the folds, branching out, hiding in the heavy draperies and the carved wood of the frame.
Tubbles is back, student sir. Tubbles is bringing students dirt.
Kurama blinked and looked away from the bed. Thank you, Tubbles, he said politely. The house elf set the flower pot on the nightstand and vanished. Kurama scooped out a fistful of dirt with his free hand, then bent down and packed it into the corner of his bed frame, between the slats. With his other hand, he slowly drew down the root end of his plant, growing more of the stem as he went, rather than disturb the vines curling in the curtains, and pushed it carefully into the earth. Another second of power, and it took root, securing the dirt into its corner. Kurama poured a bit of water from his night pitcher onto the root, and carefully pulled himself free. The bed looked exactly the same as it had before. He took two more seeds from his hair, and pushed one into the flower pot before taking a second handful of dirt. This time he went to the open window and levered himself onto the wide ledge. He barely glanced at the spectacular view. The Slytherin dungeons were set into the bluff overlooking the lake. As he focused on finding a crack or tiny ledge in the stone without dislodging the ivy already growing there. Soon enough he found one, and he filled it with the fresh dirt and his final seed for the night. He made it sprout, and it threw out a jumble of wire-thin stems and nearly transparent, teardrop-shaped leaves the size of his palm. Kurama sent his power through this vine somewhat more quickly than he had the first, and at this hour, it wasn't so noticeable if plants were growing on the outside of the castle, rather than on the inside, and at this hour there wasn't enough light for a human to see the telltale shiver in the ivy as his new plant grew through and tangled with it. Focusing most of his attention on the growing stems, he searched for cracks and holes at the far ends. He found a number of openings and sent those stems wiggling through, most hitting dead ends. A few, though, re-entered the castle dungeons. Kurama sent these running along the corridors in all directions, keeping to the corners of the walls and burrowing between the flagstones. Now he began to let the vine flower, its tiny, closed buds sprouting at key points along the branches, in rooms, at the ends of hallways, at intersections, and pointed up and down stairwells. Eventually his vine was laced through the entirety of the habitable parts of the dungeons. Kurama paused, took a deep breath, and sent a final surge of power through the length of the vine, now kilometers long, making every tiny, mottled gray flower bloom, revealing a tiny lens in the center of each. He twisted the power, setting his Makai spy eye at this size, and released it. He slowly disentangled his hands from the vine, noticing they were trembling faintly, and clenched them into fists as he straightened. Now came the hard part of the evening. Dealing with Malfoy. Draco had been battling an oncoming headache when he'd left the common room for the dorms. Voldemort, his father, that bastard Potter, Weasel, the mudblood, Dumbledum Arse's favoritism, the transfer brat in fifth year. At least that one wasn't here. And the Slytherin transfer, the viper redhead, had all contributed to the rapid onset of a tension headache of monstrous proportions already. Not to mention the disgusting table habits of his lackeys had been worse than ever tonight. At least they'd promised to wash before coming back from their dessert raid. Draco entered the room quietly, head pounding, and instantly noticed the extra bed in the room. A flash of red. Red? Drew his eyes to the window, and his headache intensified as he recognized his new roommate. The boy was friends with Bloody Potter. He'd been rude to Draco on the train. He'd done it again at the table, in front of a horde of backstabbing Slytherins. No one was rude to Draco Malfoy, especially not twice. He moved silently towards Minamino, hastily putting together a plan. The redhead was on the window ledge, oblivious to the world. Perhaps the only time he would be before he wised up to the realities of the world. Constant vigilance. The only point Draco would ever agree on with a certain ferret-making nutcase was necessary. Be that as it was, Minamino was in the window, and you didn't need strength, just leverage, to hold someone close to your size precariously from one of those. Draco would have him at the advantage, easily, and then he could educate the upstart transfer on proper behavior towards him. Minamino hadn't noticed him. Another 10 inches, 6, 3. His hands came up, stretching towards Minamino. 1. Vines snapped around Draco's outstretched wrists. More caught his ankles. He instinctively opened his mouth to yell, and a wad of leaves stuffed themselves in and muffled the sound, their vine looping around Draco's head to secure the leaves in place. The vines yanked Draco off his feet and pulled him, fighting, onto Minamino's bed, tightening as he struggled. He pushed against the mattress, knocking the bed covers askew and making the springs protest, the vines pulling tighter in retaliation until Draco could barely move, laid out spread eagle on the bed. He bit down hard on the leaves in his mouth, furious. How dare Minamino? How dare he? How dare... How... Draco suddenly realized he couldn't tell what Minamino had done. He couldn't find any trace of recognizable magic in the vines, aside from the bit that marked them as inherently magical. No charms, no potions, nothing dark, no sign of any sentient being's touch, just pure magical plant. Minamino had done nothing to it. What the hell? A soft sound made Draco snap his head to the side. Minamino had come out of whatever trance state he'd been in, and was now gazing blankly at him through half-lidded eyes. Draco wasn't sure the other boy was completely out of his trance.
"Good evening, Mr. Malfoy,"
he murmured. Draco tried to hiss through the leaves, yanking at his wrist ties and glaring.
"Please stay still," Minamino continued. "Devil's snare is rather difficult. You don't want to cut off your circulation."
Draco stilled, seething. Devil's snare? He was caught in a devil's snare vine? Why wasn't Minamino doing something? Like, getting a teacher to deal with the infestation? How had the house elves let something like this get into the dorms and grow this big? When he was free, he was going to write to his father.
Minamino sat down next to Draco on the bed, driving Draco's fury and his headache up another notch.
He was crazy. He had to be. A complete lunatic. How was Draco supposed to get out of the devil's snare if Minamino got stuck too?
He didn't want to be trapped with a lunatic in some Merlin-cursed dumb plant all night.
"Are you in pain?"
Minamino asked. Draco glared at him. How the hell was he supposed to answer that? With a lump of soggy, bad-tasting leaves in his mouth, and vines wrapped so tightly around his wrists that they were probably relieving some really suggestive bruises. And did he mention he'd had a pounding anger headache before all this in the first place?
Minamino reached over him and brushed a finger against the vine holding Draco's right wrist. "Loosen up a bit," he instructed. Confusion flared in Draco for a split second, before all the vines holding him went slack. He instantly tried to pull away, and found that they were still holding him firmly in place, just not as painfully as before. He stared at Minamino in dawning horror. He still couldn't see any spells on the vines, but Devil's Snare just did not let go on command.
"I am in control of them," Minamino confirmed,
empty eyes locking onto Draco's shocked ones.
"You're still in pain,"
he added, expressionless. Draco didn't get it. If he had control like that, had someone he disliked trapped and in pain, he wouldn't be so unimpressed with himself, would he?
Minamino suddenly, smoothly, ran a hand through his hair. He crushed something between his fingers, eyes flicking to Draco, and blew it into the blonde's face. Draco reared up against the vines, sputtering past his gag.
"Better?"
Draco sneezed, then sagged in his bonds, eyes closing in relief. The headache was gone. The relief was short-lived.
"Now, Mr. Malfoy, I'm going to let you go. But first, I think we need to clear up a few misunderstandings."
Draco's eyes flew open as a wand stroked down the side of his face.
"About defenestration."
What? Draco tensed as his mind rapidly shuddered through the lesser used parts of his vocabulary and came up with throwing people out windows. Oh, wait, Minamino knew?
"And assumptions and friends and enemies and intimidation."
Draco barely managed to keep from gulping. The redhead's voice had lowered on the last word, and there was something inherently menacing about the way he'd leaned closer to rest the wand on the pulse point at Draco's throat.
"Defenestration. I do believe I've gotten my point across about that,"
Minamino said silkily, tapping Draco's pulse with the wand.
Oh yeah, Draco got the point. Didn't mean he wouldn't try it under better circumstances. Like, maybe with backup. Or by proxy.
"So, assumptions. Today has just been a bad day for you, hasn't it, Mr. Malfoy?"
he continued. That was an understatement.
The only way it could be worse would be if anyone had actually seen this. Draco was suddenly thankful for Crab and Goyle's gluttony, especially as Minamino leaned even closer, eyes bright with anger now. You assumed that, because I was in Potter's compartment, I must have taken sides against you, without so much as knowing your name. I allowed you to insult my family, a long, honorable, purely Japanese line, without a single Gaijin Westerner among them, to insult my honor in your ignorance. His hand fisted in Draco's shirt. I held those two off you after you so blatantly provoked them. Perhaps I should have just let them thrash you. He shoved Draco back into the mattress and sat up, putting his wand hand to his temple. But I don't want to make enemies. I even fixed your headache after you tried to push me out the window. Draco's eyes focused on the wand. He lunged upward futilely, temper flaring once again. It was his wand. The upstart Pratt was playing with his wand. Minamino glanced at him, then followed Draco's eyes to his wand. The anger drained from his face. So, Ka, he murmured. Perhaps this will get through to you, and I can let you up. So, what? Minamino held up Draco's wand. This is Dragon Heartstring, correct? Oh, great. Minamino was now playing Ollivander. Draco would have refused to answer if he'd had the option. Stupid leaves. It must have been a dark, powerful dragon, Minamino murmured. That's what Ollivander had said. Vicious and petty as well, he added. Draco scowled. Ollivander had said that too. Minamino held his free hand out and snapped his wrist. A second wand flew from his sleeve into his hand. He held them both up to show Draco. The new wand was smaller than Draco's, slimmer and more angular than any wand he'd ever seen. Eastern style, Minamino answered Draco's unspoken question. With a core of demon hair. Draco paled. Demon? Like, demon? Creatures darker and more dangerous than werewolves and vampires? Minamino nodded slowly. You would have noticed it in the first class anyways. You quickly realized there was no spell on the vines after all, did you not? He stood, putting his wand back into his sleeve and setting Draco's down on the nightstand. If I wanted to make enemies, you do realize you would be considerably worse than shaken by now. He tapped the nearest tendril of devil's snare, and the vine finally unwrapped from Draco's head. He spat the leaves out and tried to speak, only getting out a rasp. He nodded instead. Minamino poured a cup of water from his night pitcher and let Draco sip it. So, Draco said roughly, once he'd had enough water to speak properly again. What do you want? What was all that melodrama for? Minamino blinked in surprise as he set the cup back on the nightstand. I would think that would be obvious. Enlighten me, Draco drawled, sneering. Well, if I don't want to make enemies, maybe I want to make friends. Now Draco was blinking. You're joking. Not at the moment, Minamino said, smiling. Draco opened his mouth to make a sharp retort, when Minamino's eyes widened slightly and he set a finger to his lips in a hushing gesture. Draco instinctively paused, obeying for the second Minamino needed to recognize whatever he seemed to be hearing. Minamino suddenly clutched at his vine, making shooing gestures with his free hand, and Draco found himself free and lying on Minamino's bed, with the vines nowhere in sight. The redhead quickly helped Draco up, pulling him around Goyle's bed and sitting him down on his own. The curtains around Minamino's bed shut themselves. What? Think about it. But don't take forever. We don't have it, okay? He spun back to his own bed, digging a set of pajamas and a toiletry bag from his trunk, and left, brushing past Crab and Goyle just outside the door. The two glanced after Minamino and entered the room with identical confused expressions. They looked at the new bed, then up at Draco expectantly. Don't bother, Draco told them. He's put wards on it already. Really, really good,
unnerving wards. With Devil's Snare. He waved a hand lazily, faking nonchalance. I'm working on it. They accepted that and went to their own beds. Draco got up and headed to the prefect's bathroom. Following a long bath, during which Kurama realized he'd have to rein in the Yoko facets of his personality a bit more than he'd thought, he got dressed and headed for the sinks to brush his teeth. He was slightly surprised to find a wet-haired Draco Malfoy at one of them. Kurama had been alone in the bath area, and he hadn't heard a shower running. Draco was combing his hair, and the sleeve of his robe had slid down, fully revealing his wrist. Kurama could see the reddened imprints of the vines in the pale skin, already starting to darken with bruising. He winced. That had to hurt. Impulsively, he dug into his bag and found a small jar. Here, he said, setting the jar next to the sink. It's a healing salve. I don't accept charity, Malfoy snapped, throwing Kurama a furious glare. I don't give charity, Kurama replied flatly. I caused those. Use it or don't. It's up to you. But if you don't, people will notice, and there'll be questions. Questions can be hazardous. He spun on his heel and left, catching the tangy scent of the salve just before the door fell shut behind him. It would seem that Malfoy had decided to use it. That was something, at least. Kurama's first night at Hogwarts was going well, but it had been a bit rough. Hopefully, the others were settling in more easily. Hermione led the new Gryffindors along the simplest, though not the most direct, route to the tower from the Great Hall, not counting the one that only existed every other Tuesday, since today was Friday. The route had no trick staircases, no hidden doors, and led through just one secret passage on the fourth floor. It was just after they'd left this passage that Peeves found them. The first balloon smacked a little pigtailed girl in the head, splattering neon green paint over most of the children in the front of the group. They all spun as the second came flying through the air, and it hit Hiei in the chest, covering him in magenta from his headband to his trousers.
Peeves!
Harry and Hermione yelled. The poltergeist cackled with glee and blew a raspberry. Don't make me get the Baron, Hermione shouted. The hair on the back of Harry's neck prickled, as he felt the air suddenly getting hotter on one side of him. He glanced over, seeing only Yusuke and Hiei. Yusuke glanced at Hiei as well, and suddenly stepped forward, pushing back on Hiei's shoulder a bit in an unmistakable signal to stand down. You think it's funny to pick on kids? He asked, glaring up at the poltergeist. Peeves beamed nastily.
Don't gotta answer to students.
Yusuke brought up his right arm, finger pointing at the spirit, as Peeves brought out another balloon and reared back to throw it.
Ray gun!
By the time the new Gryffindors reached the portrait of the fat lady, the older students were frazzled for two reasons. One, the first years had developed an excessively vocal mass case of hero worship focused on Yusuke. Two, it had taken the three boys and a silencing spell from Hermione to get Hiei away from the scene. Harry was sure the few words Hiei had gotten out weren't polite in Japanese, and was rather thankful they hadn't translated. Mimbulus Mimbletonia, Hermione said to the painting guarding the entrance. She looked tempted to just shove the first years through the portrait. Harry knew he was. Unfortunately, Hermione took the rules too seriously for him to get away with it. Besides, they were just kids. She did, however, give Yusuke and Hiei a push when they looked like they wanted to linger in the corridor. Harry let Hermione get up before the students to explain the rules, while he stepped back to stand near Ron. What's up with them? Ron asked, nodding to the new students. We ran into Peeves on the way up.
Who'd he get?
Hiei and the little girl next to Yurameshi. Paint balloons. Ron flicked a startled glance over the students. Hermione cleaned them up, Harry added.
then paused. After Urameshi knocked Peeves out.
He what?
He pointed at him, yelled something that sounded like ray gun, and Peeves got blasted by a big ball of light.
Wow, I want to learn that spell.
I don't think it was a spell. He wasn't using a wand.
Ron blinked. No wand?
Harry shook his head. Did Fred and George put you up to this?
No, look, I know it sounds crazy, but it happened.
What happened? Neville asked. The other two hadn't noticed him walk up.
Urameshi cast a spell without his wand and knocked Peeves out, Ron said.
What? But that's impossible, Neville said.
Ask him yourself,
Harry grumbled, tilting his head to point out Yusuke. Neville paled and began shaking his head violently.
Fine, ask one of the firsts. They saw it too.
He pushed past Ron and went upstairs to his dorm. He first noticed the room had grown to accommodate three more beds. Then he realized Hiei was there as well, standing at the foot of one of the new beds. He had a faintly violet-glowing quill in his hand and was carefully drawing on the bedpost.
Hiei? What?
Hiei dipped the quill into a small jar of ink and went back to working on the odd design.
Your...
Harry meant to say that they weren't allowed to draw on school property, but it struck him that it might not be what it seemed.
What are you doing?
Wards.
What?
Hiei glanced at Harry like he was an idiot.
Protection spells.
But we're at Hogwarts.
Hiei made a disdainful sound, added a precise swirl to the end of the pattern, and set the quill on the bed.
The violet tinge faded away. Hiei brought his hand up, holding it parallel to and an inch from the top of the pattern, and slowly moved his hand downwards.
Now what are you doing?
Activating them. Hiei sat down on his bed and faced Harry with a steady, disconcerting gaze.
You ask a lot of questions.
You do a lot of strange things. Hiei raised an eyebrow at the quick comeback, his faintly expectant smirk prompting Harry to add,
like wandless magic.
Don't be ridiculous, Hiei snapped. The smirk stayed in place, taking the sting from the words.
Wandless magic is a toy for posturing old men.
Harry's jaw dropped.
You mean anyone can do wandless magic?
Hiei just shook his head, still smirking, and leaned over to dig a black sweatsuit from his trunk.
Night.
But... Hiei shut his curtains pointedly. Harry rocked back on his heels, hurt. He'd been trying to be nice to the smaller boy. Slowly, he changed into his own nightclothes, balled up his invisibility cloak under his pillow, and got into bed, pulling the curtains securely closed.
Knox, he said, snuffing out the light.
Let the others think he'd gone to bed early. It wouldn't be the first time he'd done so. It also wouldn't be the first time he'd only pretended to be sleeping when the others came in. It was easier to roam the halls after hours if he wasn't missing at lights out. Later on, he'd find out what happened to Snape.
Later.
Hiei went from a sound sleep to total awareness exactly when he'd planned, 2 hours after he'd first gone to bed. He counted the others in their room by their breathing and scent. 3 he didn't recognize, Harry and Ron, Yusuke and Kuwabara, who was snoring. All were sound asleep. He sat up, wincing at the overly loud rustle of the bedclothes, and slipped his feet out of the bed and directly into his boots. He would have to add a low-level sound muffler to his wards. He took more care to be quiet as he opened his trunk and removed his katana from the dimensional pocket in the lid. Now armed and cloaked, he silently left the tower and took to the rafters. He loosened his headband slightly, using a bit of the power of his third eye to better sense the intricate weave of the castle's magic, and began exploring his new territory.
The security here was terrible, Hiei noted immediately. There were 2 different types of systems in place. The overt system, the one meant to be noticed,
consisted of things like the living portraits and the moving staircases. Hiei was not impressed with this system. The fat lady on his own dormitory had been asleep and hadn't so much as stirred when he left. A group portrait, watching three hallways, had been in a fistfight when he'd passed. Three of the four trick doors he'd found were even standing open. The second system was also less than acceptable. The dimensional fold to prevent teleportation was firmly in place, but there was no sign that transmission, teleportation using a spelled device rather than one's own magic, had ever been protected against. He also found a number of fireplaces, including the one directly into the Gryffindor common room, that showed signs of being part of a communication and transmission network. At least teleportation was impossible, and the fireplaces could be monitored. It also looked as if the castle couldn't be blown up, contaminated with poisons or diseases, flooded, buried, burned, or otherwise harmed by natural disasters, or simple assaults by human wizards. So they weren't completely defenseless. Just mostly. Annoyed, Hiei landed on the narrow sill of a window high above the moving staircases. It was grimy and missing several panes of glass, so he had to look through the holes to orient his position relative to the other parts of the school. As he marked off the nearest towers, he'd mentally named the ones he'd found so far, and could see Gryffindor, Library, Astronomy, and Hollow. He caught sight of a lone flyer coming around the corner of the stairway atrium. He drew his katana slightly and tilted it, moonlight flashing from the exposed bit of the blade, and resheathed it as the flyer angled towards him. "Hello?" Botan called softly, peering into the window. Hiei made no effort to hide himself. "Hello?" she repeated, a bit louder. "Their security is ridiculous," Hiei said flatly. Botan yelped, jerking her oar away from the window on reflex. "Hiei?" she asked, floating back up. "You scared me." "What can you tell of the security outside?" he asked, ignoring her comment.
There's not much on the windows. You can get in and out with an oar easily. I can't tell if they're just not spelled against flyers, or if the spells are specific to brooms, so my oar's not covered."
"Inadequate window spells," Hiei summarized impatiently. "What else?"
"Well," Botan said, thoughtfully, "the forest isn't very forbidden. No wards or anything keeping people out at all. I flew right over part of it."
A whisper of magic brushed against Hiei, and he twitched irritably, brushing the nuisance away magically. It tried again, and he caught it and held it this time. A few seconds later, the sound of grinding stone echoed through the atrium. Hiei held up a hand to silence Botan and looked down. Several stories below, one of the staircases was pivoting on its upper landing, the second level one leading to the Gryffindor Tower. Hiei could easily see two robed figures hurrying down the steps.
"Hiei?" Botan whispered. "What is it?"
"Shut up." Another, more insistent tendril of power brushed Hiei, and he caught this one too. His eyes narrowed as he examined them. The first was a simple urging to leave the area. The second, the one he'd caught after noticing the two people on the stairs, was a stronger compulsion to stay. Hiei darted down through the staircase atrium, knowing that he was moving so fast that the human eye would see the movement only as a series of flickers. He was dimly aware that Botan called after him, fortunately not loudly enough for human ears to pick up, and even that faded away somewhere near the fifth floor. Another wash of magic tried to direct Hiei away from an archway on the ground level. He subdued it and followed the trail, catching sight of the two students as they stepped into a tapestry. Darting after them before the magical entry could close, Hiei followed them at a discreet distance as they headed down a corridor lined with doors, each inscribed with the name of one of the teachers. The silly portrait door system was unneeded here, each door covered in personal wards as uniquely identifying as fingerprints. So when the two students stopped at one particular door, Hiei didn't need to see the nameplate to tell it was Genkai's. He settled himself near the ceiling, in the shadow of a gargoyle,
and watched as they brushed the flagstone in front of her door with a thin coat of something watery and gray, working together in silence with the ease of long practice. He faintly caught the scent of damp limestone as one capped and rehid the bottle in his clothes. The other flicked his wand at the wet floor, drawing it and presumably activating the trap. They hurried off without so much as a thumbs up to each other. The subtle, weak power trying to drive Hiei away faded and vanished. It wasn't Hiei's responsibility to watch out for Genkai. If she couldn't guard against a couple of human teenagers, Hiei wouldn't want her at his back in a fight. But that didn't mean he couldn't look at the trap that had been so neatly and easily set for her. He leapt from his perch, careful to land outside the perimeter of the trap, and knelt down to examine it. His lips quirked upwards in a smirk as he scrutinized the inherent magical qualities of the potion's ingredients. None were malignant, and in fact, they were precisely balanced to the safest combination, rather than the most effective. It would be amusing to see Genkai's face if this particular trap worked properly. Knowing that he could easily locate the two amusing miscreants again, Hiei decided to return to the dorms, so as to not raise any alarms. He retraced his steps, checking the atrium window to find Botan had flown on. Good. And soon found himself back at the portrait of the fat lady. She didn't even twitch in her sleep when he said the password and entered. One would think they would at least use portraits that didn't sleep, he groused, as he returned to bed.